Watch it. Boys bracing. Here we go. And go hard. And go hard. Very good.
The Paddler's Pod with Sam and Macca.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. We hear your applause, we hear the celebrations, because the Paddler's Pod is back after its shortest ever break between episodes. Macca, it's only been 2 weeks, but here we are once again, eh?
That's amazing, actually. Look at us. It's only taken us 16 episodes to finally get the hang of things. How's life, Sam? Things are not looking good in Sydney.
Oh, wow, mate. Way to kick things off on a sour note. Now, look, what I'm going to say, Macca, is, mate, how good is the Olympics? Good is the Olympic spirit that is still flowing through us after what was an incredible 2 weeks of competition? Macca, we were speaking on the last episode about the Olympics, but the day after we actually recorded it, and I think it was actually this happened before we had a chance to publish the episode, was that Australia won gold in the men's K2-1000. Tom Green and John van der Westhuizen winning the event for the first time in Australia's history. So that one got plenty of people excited. I'm feeling a little bit lost now that it's gone, especially because, as you did just allude to, things aren't doing great here in Australia. Look, Sydney, we're 8 weeks into our lockdown now. I think we're going to have a long time to go.
Eight weeks to go.
Last time, actually, Macca, we spoke about you not being in lockdown. Then by the time the episode came out, you were in lockdown. And now you're free again.
And now I'm free. Right, that's like the revolving door of Southeast Queensland. It's unbelievable. I don't think we want to miss out on things. We're like, oh, a lockdown? Oh, we'll have a case. Let's go back in for a little bit.
You know what? Let's try and make the rest of this episode a lockdown-free zone. Let's try and give people a break in Australia. And for the rest of the world anyway, I'm sure they don't care. As long as we're all getting out on the water, hey, and chasing some runs, I'm sure everyone is pretty happy about that one. Macca, and have you been doing that?
I have, actually. I've been paddling a lot. We just spoke about that privately. I think we're on...
You said 2 days ago that you were going to beat me at the moment if we race.
Yeah.
Arrogant guy.
I think you're always looking for a prick, but no, I was... I've been paddling a lot. I've been doing a lot of work. I had my vaccine the other day. I did my civic duty. That's not a plug to get a vaccine. I'm just saying that I did it. But look, I was a bit tired afterwards, actually. It sort of knocked me around a little bit. But it just allowed me to get out on the water, and there's no effort in the paddling too much. I'm just doing the miles and ticking along and making myself feel good.
Any excuse, eh? Any excuse will do, won't it?
Having fun, and I'm enjoying it.
Things did take a little hit this week, which we are about to speak about in our power plays. And later on, we will be chatting... Well, speaking of the Olympics as well, with Tennille Hatton, now a two-time Olympian. She finished fourth in New Zealand's K4-500. And let's not forget, above all else, she is a world surf ski champion too, Macca. You're good, mate? Ready to go?
Yeah, let's fire away.
The Paddler's Pod. Power Plays.
And this episode, the Power Plays, is once again brought to you by Vi Kobe and Macca. A little shortened three-pack. Worked so well last time. We're going to do it again.
Copy and paste.
Number three.
Kicking things off at number three. Well, I did just say it was going to be a lockdown-free zone, but I guess it's pretty hard to avoid with this one. The Australian Ocean Racing Series has been cancelled for 2021. It's the second straight year that organisers have been forced into the decision due to the border restrictions and event restrictions that are currently in place around Australia. It just wasn't feasible for it to go ahead. Look, as you alluded to, Macca, New South Wales lockdown is, well, it's getting worse and worse here. So that essentially meant that there is no chance the West Australian border will be open by November for the doctor, while, mate, we probably won't be getting up north to Queensland anytime soon as well. So, look, it was a predictable decision, Macca, but a disappointing one nonetheless for all the paddlers who were getting excited to actually finally race again.
I think so. I mean, I know so. You know, you hear people that some guys that I know and I've had the pleasure of coaching a little bit are in Victoria, and they've been paddling on the Yarra for, I think, 3 years now, training to go to Molokai, which isn't really going to happen. And then obviously sites, okay, we'll set our sites a little more local on the doctor, and they've been trying to go to that for 2 years and it just keeps eluding them, which I get the frustration. And I think even more so for the fact that, you know, we go back, we were at the Australian titles in April, and it was like COVID free. Everyone was out and about. And to think that we've gone back into a situation that's worse than where we started, I don't want to make this all about COVID, but it's almost a failure on the decision makers higher up in a way. And we won't dwell on that too much, but.
All right. I'm going to cut you off there, mate. That's negative enough. Let's focus
on this. I know. I was getting there. I was coming around. I don't think that this means that there's going to be too many races cancelled from the calendar. Yes, there'll be some races in Sydney, say the Chucky, the North Bondi Ocean Classic, and the Doctor, which don't look like they'll go ahead. But everything else in their states should run.
That's exactly right, Macca, and I love that switch in positivity as well. I have one last little negative comment to say before we get there, and that the disappointment, you know, for everyone, Dean Gardner, who is the series director of the Australian Ocean Racing Series, you know, he did say that after the Doctor and WA Race Week in 2019, he felt that we were on the verge of something special as a sport, and it is just disappointing that we haven't had a chance to capitalise on that in Australia. But all positive from here on. Like you were mentioning, all of the races in their individual states, there is a really good chance they will still go ahead. So In Queensland, that's the Gold Coast Classic and even the Old Woman Paddle in a couple of weeks' time. In Victoria, they've got the Impossibles at the start of December. Tasmania has its major race, the Surf Ski Safari, towards the end of the year, while all of the Western Australian races, that's the Sunset Surf Ski Series events, and the West Coast Downwind will still go ahead. So, look, there is still something to train for Australian paddlers. In New South Wales, the 20 Beaches organisers want to try and make that one happen as well in whatever form. So, hope isn't lost, but yeah, Macca, as you said, maybe not too much travelling in between. Another positive to touch on too is that the Shaw & Partners naming rights sponsorship from this year's series will be transferred to next year. So there's still another 2 years of Shaw & Partners sponsoring the Australian series, which is good for the sport as well. The other sponsors that did make this happen have all kind of indicated an early interest to remain as supporters on next year's series. So Macca, mate, we just go again, hey?
We're close. We'll just keep plodding away. And like you touched on, I think it is, it's of importance to note that we are on the cusp of something great. We spoke about on the last podcast about maybe surf ski paddling joining the Olympics in 2032. But look, we need to be able to run races for that to happen.
2032, well, that might be Macca's big call done and dusted for this episode anyway. But look, internationally around the world, we are seeing races continuing to go ahead, and I guess that's a product of the situation that all those countries and continents have been in themselves. So Aussie paddlers, don't look on in sadness. We will get there, and hopefully we will get there soon.
Number two.
Macca, the paddler has been online now for, well, almost a year and a half. And I don't want to go over the top. I don't want to hyperbolize anything and exaggerate too greatly, but I'm pretty sure this is the single greatest story that has ever been told on the paddler. All right, Joe Tablanche, a surf ski paddler from Durban in South Africa, was setting out for what he calls a short downwind last week with his paddling partner, Quinton Rutherford, who we all might recognize from his world record achievement, a 227K downwind last year. They were only going for 50Ks on this day, so a nice, short, quick one.
Just small.
Joe said he had the feeling before he got on the water that day that he just double-checked his life jacket. He made sure he had his phone. He made sure he had all of his safety equipment, and then off they went. It was 40 to 50 kilometre an hour winds, pumping down winds, and it didn't take long for them to kind of split up and lose each other in the pretty steep conditions. There was no missing what happened next, though. A whale has breached out of the water right in front of him. Joe said it was like in slow motion. He could see the whale's eye looking straight at him as it was making his way up. And it was so big, an adult-sized whale, that he had enough time to kind of climb onto his ski, dive off the side of it, and try and get out of the way. And this thing has crushed his surf ski. He copped a little bit of a knock from the splash and the fin as it came down. It threw him some 15 metres, he said, left him somewhat concussed, and 3 kilometres off the coast with no real way to get in. He did manage to scrap his way in. He swam. Another paddler happened to come past and saw him. He kind of dragged him in for about another K and a half. And then he swam the last 500 meters in. Macca, this story is simply unbelievable, but maybe
just
as incredible as the way Joe tells it. Take a listen to this.
As I on this run, this massive whale just breached right in front of me, like in front of my nose on my ski, over me, like on top of me. I looked up, I said, oh shit, what now, dude? And it like, it's like slow motion. It breached up, it like turned his body, and I thought, oh fuck, what now? So now, like, I had enough time to climb on my ski and jumped off like a meter. And as I jumped off, it landed in the middle of my ski, snapped, like, cracked my skin off, and his pectoral fin hit me on the head. And that, now that spray and the wash of the splash washed me away like 10 meters from my ski.
Can people believe what happened? Can you believe what happened?
No, they don't believe it. They think I'm fucking bullshit. So I got out the water and I've been walking in there like in a daze. And people say, well, why are you walking down with your PDF? I said, no, I just had a bit of an incident with the whale. Ah, bullshit. Talking shit.
You know what? The lifeguards in that story have a pretty good point because it is
absurd.
Unbelievable to say the least, Macca.
Absolutely absurd. It's whale season here in Australia, and so I actually came close to one the other day, but it wasn't breaching, so that was a nice relief. But we were doing a downwind on Monday, and it was a little way away. It was probably 500 meters away from where I was, but the noise that it made when it connected back with the ocean is like a bomb going off. I cannot imagine what must be happening when you're sitting there and this whale breaches, looks you dead in the eye like, ha-ha, I got you.
Mate, fuck at him, all right? God, crushing his boat in the way that it did. The boat actually washed up on the beach about 5 kilometres later. It was still kind of held together by bits of foam through the stringer as well as the rudder cables itself.
Giving an alibi to his story, so the lifeguards did.
That's exactly right, and everyone has seen it online as well. Macca, so many people that I work with always say to me, aren't you scared of sharks? Aren't you thinking about sharks when you're doing downwinders? And my whole life, I've always said to them, no, I'm scared of whales.
Yeah.
For that exact reason. Look, I've been more concerned about getting a run and actually paddling into one, and no doubt that would probably crack or snap the ski or snap the rudder off the boat. I've never even imagined one breaching on top of me. That is unfathomable and horrifying at the same time.
Dear, dear, dear.
Unfathomable, Macca, but that isn't even the worst part. See, you might be thinking, I don't know how Joe's so relaxed when he's recounting this story and how he got himself back to the beach, but there's a pretty simple explanation. It's happened before, except last time it happened, it wasn't a whale that took off the front of his boat. It was a shark. 2 years ago, some big thing in a grey suit came out of the water and chomped the nose clean off his ski, leaving him sitting in what clearly is sharky waters, slowly, slowly sinking in. And he says that was the craziest experience of his life. Macca, it is hard enough to imagine this happening once, but to happen twice. I asked Joe whether he's the luckiest or the unluckiest surf ski paddler in the world to escape both times uninjured. He says lucky because he escaped uninjured, but I'm not so convinced.
I'm not convinced either. I'm listing the next type of animal that's got their sights set on him. It sounds like Joe's...
Giant turtle?
Yeah, Joe's giant just squid. Out there. He's got the giant squid that's coming to wrap himself around his ski. Honestly, I don't know how that... If lightning doesn't strike twice, well, I call absolute bullshit on that.
Macca, it's the most unheard story you've ever heard of. As you said earlier, thankfully there are the images to back up Joe's tale. But there is a happy ending to this one. After I spoke to him for the article on the paddler.news, Joe got in touch. Huge smile on his face, shaking the hand of none other than Hank McGregor. The Durban surf ski community pulled together and made sure that Joe got a new ski. And it's an old ski owned by none other than the man himself, the legendary Hank. So Macca, thankfully Joe is back on the water. He said that he was feeling a little bit rattled about getting back out there, but he certainly was going to do it. So look, at least he didn't have to go through the process of trying to track down a new boat. That's a really nice story to see the way the surf ski community's banded together for a bloke that, geez, had to deal with enough, hasn't he?
Yeah, give him a break. I mean, he has maybe ended up better off. He's got an award-winning ski under his belt. So,
what's your ultimate racing war story? Well, I had the front of my boat bitten off by a shark, and then 2 years later, I was crushed by a whale. He's done incredibly well to escape, and we're certainly glad to hear it.
Number one.
Gold, gold, gold for Australia, and more importantly, another surf ski paddler. Tom Green is a Gold Coast lifesaver. He started out in the surf lifesaving movement. He won an Australian junior surf ski title, and he's been racing ocean skis and training in them as well. He's paddling a Nordic for the team here in Australia, but now he is an Olympic champion along with John van der Westhuizen, who was a South African, but he is now proudly an Aussie as well. Look, Macca, it would be remiss of us not to touch on the race. First off, very briefly, because I know our international friends probably don't really care about the Australian spirit too much, but it was, for me, the event of the entire canoe sprint program, going head-to-head with Jacob Schoff and the legendary Max Hoff.
I only paddled with Daniel Bowker, who was also an Olympic kayaker in 2016 in Rio. And I was saying, like, how often, I mean, you know kayaking better than I do, but I said, how often does someone lead for 1,000 metres in a K1 or a K2? He's like, yeah, it doesn't really happen that often. I think it was really, really impressive to see. And that was their race strategy. And I think they deployed it almost perfectly. I was a little worried come the closing stages, you know, going neck and neck with the German contingent. It was just a really good race to see, and it was like a battle for the ages, really. David versus Goliath type thing.
Two paddlers who really did benefit from getting that extra year of preparation and paddling experience under their belt. And Mackie, you're exactly right. That's exactly what I thought in that last 50 metres. Where did they find the strength to pull that out? And the first thing that came to me, mate, was probably surf ski paddling. So I rang the greatest...
just a pure grunt.
I rang the greatest ever to do both sports. Clint Robinson, of course, an Olympic champion. He has a full set of Olympic medals from his 5 Olympic campaigns. And he's also the greatest surf life-saving ski paddler that we've seen. He's won a couple of Molokais, 36 Aussies life-saving titles as well, mind you. 13 of them single ski races. All right, I think we all know who Robbo is. But look, Robbo had some really interesting reflections. There is an article up on the paddler.news where you can read all about that. Basically, he said that it has been identified by coaches around the world, particularly from powerhouse nations like Germany, that Australian paddlers have this really big strength development base that gets ingrained into them from years of paddling a heavier ski through waves, through runs, downwind, just putting more load on your body. And he thinks that is behind the reason why Australia now has 19 canoe sprint Olympic medalists who have come from surf life-saving. Macca, it's an incredible conversion rate and an incredible base that the sport can pull athletes from.
I think it's something they're always looking at trying to pull athletes from, like you said, and it's a pretty good success rate, you must have to say. Just, it's pretty apparent as well that is what it is. It's repetition over what is about a 500 meter course, and that's how you train. And the lactic acid buildup is something that, you know, it's just something that happens all the time in kayaking. And there's even more, there's limited rest in surf ski paddling. You think about kayaking, it's, you know, you've got maximum amount of rest time. So, you know, they targeted their sport well, and they've certainly delivered upon it.
Well, that's exactly right. You can read that full article on the paddler.news, and I really recommend that you do. Clint has some really interesting insights about that. And look, it is in the article, but it's worth noting as well on the podcast that 19 who have made the switch to get medals, Clint says that's actually not good enough. He thinks that the sport has actually let itself down by not making more of an effort to get surf paddlers involved. He doesn't even say 5% of Australia's best paddlers have gone on to paddling kayaks. So it gives you an indication of how big that talent pool is. But Macca, it's something else that Clint and I spoke about during our 1 hour conversation on the phone the other day.
The man does like to talk.
Mate, he's got plenty of incredible insights, so I love listening as well. It was around the topic of conversation of surf ski paddling in the Olympics. I asked him two questions. One, Do you think it will become an Olympic sport? And do you want it to become an Olympic sport? The answer to both was quite succinct, and that was no. I don't want it to become an Olympic sport, and I don't think it will either. He thinks that not enough countries do it around the world at the moment for it to be considered an Olympic sport, although he did have some quite defamatory, if not inflammatory, things to say about this sport of canoe slalom that we will not be repeating. But he did also say that he doesn't want it to become an Olympic sport too. And that's some of the feedback that we got in our last episode, actually, that a lot of people saying that what we have as a sport of downwind paddling is so pure and so enjoyable that they don't want it tainted by the, dare I say it, corrupt influences that are involved around the Olympics.
Probably hit the nail on the head there. You know, I've seen, and we both have good mates that go to the Olympics, and you know, when you watch it on TV, you know, I grew up with Emma McCann, and I, like, you watch it and you're like, wow, I know her, how cool is that? I mean, you know, I know Tom and John, like, I've had the pleasure of paddling with them, but you forget about the politics that happen behind the scenes, and it's one of those things that it's not always the grass is greener on the other side. Sometimes you take for granted what you have, and I think surf ski paddling does have something special to offer. And if we do go down the path of, you know, Olympics, then maybe that gets tainted. You know, we won't know unless we try. But at the same time, look, what do they say? Don't fix it until it's broke.
I don't know if that is what they say. They say if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Maybe, I got it
wrong. But Macro, I love your attempt nonetheless. Look, of course, this is quite a big pivot on our excitement on the last episode where we both said that we'd love to see it in the Olympics.
Oh, don't get me wrong. It'd be cool.
Look, I would love to see it in the Olympics, but you can't look past the fact that it wouldn't be the sport that we love in future as a result. So, look, Clint had a really interesting suggestion on how we can continue to move forward as a sport. Here is a little bit of his thoughts now.
The greatest thing that could ever happen to paddling in the world at the moment is an International Ocean Racing Federation needs to be born. If that was born and it was just worked in conjunction, like, you know, you've got your professional body of tennis and you've got your Olympic regime of tennis, right? And now, after three or four Olympic Games, a lot of the greats have come across and played in the Olympics, or they're at the Olympics regularly, right? If you had an International Ocean Racing Federation, you wouldn't just have all these pot-up sponsors that come along. A fellow called Joe Glickman, at that time I was talking with Joe and about three or four other people about trying to invent an ocean paddling federation. And that would have had two or three key manufacturers invited to that at certain meetings, one or two full-time employees that would run the program, set up a proper World Series like tennis, not have a zillion races, but four or five great races in the world every year. I honestly believe ocean ski racing has a fantastic opportunity to keep growing because of the interest of people doing fun fitness type stuff, which is all about ocean ski paddling, right?
So some really interesting reflections there from Clint, and also interesting to note that, you know, this is a project that Joe Glickman had been trying to work on and get something off the ground. And I know from a lot of people, a lot of influential people in different parts of the world as well, that this is something that does get spoken about. Macca, it is a hard one to do though. The sport would need some investment, some real investment to get it to happen. And I'm talking about not investment in prize money, but in full-time staff, in officials and those who have the abilities to actually get this thing off the ground. Look, we have seen we have seen the success that the World Surf Ski League has brought to the sport in its short time. But look, behind the scenes, that's been quite difficult as well for a lot of the competitors who were made to wait more than 6 months to receive their prize money, and they didn't even know if they'd get that at all the last time that series was held. So look, I certainly don't know if that's the... And these are all things that if we're going to be taken seriously as an international sport, it simply can't be happening, things like that. So look, Mac, I would like to see that happen one day, but, you know, in order for it to happen, we'd really need to band together.
Yeah, like you said, there is an ICF board for surf ski paddling. But, you know, having said that, we're not an Olympic sport, so we're a little down the priority list, which is a sad thing to say, but it's the reality. So look, I think Clint's pretty spot on, and we need some representation. To be able to get it to that point will take investment. And it'd be nice to be able to have races on, because we'd be continually building the profile of our sport. And we know that there's ample amount of people that want to come into it. They've got plenty of feeder programs, like we spoke about on the last episode with the New Zealand way of getting people into paddling, whatever avenue that may be. Look, it's a challenging, it's a challenge that we're faced with, but I think that it's also a very important one that we sort of have to venture out and explore, because otherwise we may not move forward.
Macca, that's a good point that you brought up about the ICF as well. They do have a dedicated surf ski committee, and in no way am I personally criticizing their contribution, the members of that board, but I'm happy to declare that personally, I think that if we're going to continue to grow as a sport, we're going to certainly need to look past the ICF, because we are not a priority for the ICF. There's no doubt about that.
Well, Sam, we don't provide any funding. That's the problem. You know, we don't go to the Olympics. We're not government funded. There's no clear pathway for anyone to succeed in surf ski paddling. So that's something that we also need to look at, is, you know, something like Europe, they've got paddling or surf ski clubs being set up, and you saw that in the last World Championships in Lanzarote. That was run by a surf ski paddling club.
It's worth looking as well, Macca, dare I say it, I know that this sport has been somewhat banned from our great podcast, but the world of SUP, it's exactly what they've done. They formed an international body, they've got European tours, they've got world tours, and they've got big business behind them. Big business. Look, I know that I don't want to sound too cynical in saying that money is everything, but really, like, as a sport, we would need big money coming in to be able to take that next step towards semi-professionalism. So, look, what is the way forward, Macca? We don't know, but there's plenty of food for thought in there, and I thought it was worth chatting about, given that this is somewhat of an Olympic special, this episode, and that Olympic spirit is about to go into overdrive. Just after this, we will be chatting with two-time Olympian Tennille Haddon after her Tokyo campaign. Macca, I've hit a monumental achievement so far in my year.
This would be cool.
Out on the water the other day. I've been rugged up in my Vicobi V-Cold range all winter, including the booties that I'm kind of wearing a little bit too much now, to be honest. Maybe I'm becoming a little bit soft. But, mate, the other day, it was short and T-shirt weather. Summer wow. is on the way, mate. It was blowing a light nor'easter. There was a little bit of bump there, and it was a hell of a time as well.
You must have had to go on out in the middle of the day. That's surf ski gypsy getting the best of the weather.
Surf ski gypsy, hold on a second, mate. I work full time. What are you doing up there on the Gold Coast?
Yeah,
in fact, I work every weekend, so I had Wednesdays and Thursdays off work. So, mate, it was afternoon on a Wednesday, but give me a go.
Yeah, I'll let you have it. You're not wrong, though. How good is it? I mean, I've been paddling in shorts and T-shirts for quite some time now, but I actually had to pull the long sleeve out the other day. You wouldn't know why. It was because it was too sunny. I didn't want to get burnt.
And that is exactly what I wore on the water that day as well. I've spoken now about my favourite piece of clothing in the world, and that's the Vicobi long sleeve UV shirt. Just one of their incredible UV range that is perfect for summer. Macca, we're talking long UV pants, we're talking short UV pants, we're talking shirt, and of course, we are talking about the bucket hat. The Vicobi bucket hat, the trendiest bit of gear that you could wear in surf ski paddling.
Could not agree more. They're always nice. I love paddling in a bucket hat too. Long sleeves, I feel like the proper waterman.
We spend so much time training on the water, Macca, out there in the sun, and although we're always having a stretch and a cool down to look after our body, we need to be making sure that we look after our skin too. Vicobi's UV range is the best way to do that. On top of that, it's comfortable, it's sufficient, and as I pointed to, it's pretty trendy as well. Head to Vicobi.com to shop their UV range, and I'm sorry, if you're on the other side of the world and you're getting ready for winter, well, check out their V-Cold range too. Well, Macca and I have been having Olympic fever here on the Paddlers Pod, and our next guest certainly knows that feeling. The Olympic part, hopefully not the fever. Joining us from quarantine in New Zealand, Tennille Haddon, congratulations and welcome to the Paddlers Pod.
Oh, hello. Thanks for having me, guys.
It's our pleasure, too.
How are you feeling, Tennille? It was an incredible campaign. You finished fourth in the K4 500. An Olympic finalist back at the Games.
Yeah, it seems a bit surreal. like going to the Olympics during a pandemic, but then also being able to compete against the best of the world and come forth. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And to think where I was like a year and a half ago, I'm still trying to get my head around it a little bit. I didn't think I'd be able to get back in the boat and certainly not be able to be racing with the big guns like I was.
Well, Tennille, a year ago, the last time we spoke was when you had had your accident with your hand. It was your hand, wasn't it? And sliced it open. I didn't hear from you for a while, and then you've popped up on the Olympic team. How did this come about?
Like, before I actually did my hand, I'd been thinking about getting back into paddling and just seeing what I could do, really. I'd got quite motivated during our lockdown at home, and I was just training my bum off. And then when we finally got out of quarantine, I got back in the boat and I was like, yeah, I want to give this a whirl. Then 2 days later, I cut my hand open. And when I went into the surgery, I asked the surgeon, I was like, man, like, I really want to get back into paddling. Like, how long do you think it'll be until I can, potentially try be at an elite level again? And he laughed at me and said, maybe don't even start considering that for probably about a year. And I was like, oh, man. So it's, that's why it's like unbelievable to be in the position I am in now.
Well, Sam, while you were in quarantine, Tennille was up here on the Gold Coast in a training camp, and I actually got to catch up with her, which was really cool to catch up with an old friend. We had some coffees, had some drinks, which the New Zealand team probably don't want to hear, but it's all over now, T. And you were saying, you did mention that when you did cut your hand, someone had floated the idea about you going back to the Olympics, and it took that sort of incident to happen. And as it was going on, it was like the lasting impression that was left in your mind, and that sort of fueled the fire as to why you wanted to go to the Olympics. And I guess while nothing was going on in surf ski, you've made the right call and you've come back an Olympian, and Sam and I are still here recording a podcast.
Yeah. I think having that goal in mind certainly got me through that time when I couldn't get back in the boat, and I was just trying to do everything else possible to get myself in a physically fit state so I could, mm-hmm. as soon as I could hold a paddle again, just get in, get amongst it. And I guess not being able to paddle definitely gave me that motivation to want to paddle. It's always the way, right? Like when you get told you can't do something, you want to do it even more. And I guess thankfully that worked in quite a positive way for me.
Tennille, you were an Olympian in 2012 and then a surf ski champion in 2015. It's been, I guess, throughout your career, you know, you've been able to switch between the two of them. Can you bring people up to speed and just let those people who may not know you too well about that transition and that success in surf ski and what you enjoyed about that compared to kayaking, and then I guess vice versa as well, going back the other way?
Yeah, like I grew up in surf lifesaving, and like a lot of the New Zealand and Australian kayak paddlers, you come from, well, most people have come from a surf lifesaving background. So from that sort of introduced me into kayaking, because I actually took up kayaking to get better at ski paddling, and then ended up enjoying kayaking a little bit more. And when I got to a point where I guess I wasn't enjoying it as much, I went back to what originally got me into paddling in the first place, and it was surf ski. And yeah, that's what I've been racing the last few years, and it's a different environment. It's you race solo, you train with, I guess there's not necessarily, for me anyway, there wasn't really a structured training group, but all the people I trained with were mainly doing it just for the fun of it. And there's something so special about paddling with people every day that just a frothing to get out on the water, and there's not necessarily like a timeline or anything like that. There's not necessarily any goals associated with it, except just having a good time out there.
It's not a job, it's a lifestyle, hey?
Yeah, 100%. And most people turn up just to hang out with everybody and exchange stories about, you know, their best downwind or like this gnarly wave they got in. I think that just sort of kept me going. That got my spark back into paddling again. And I just got to a point during lockdown that I still had that drive to want to compete. And I guess I still had a passion to want to just give kayaking another go, just to see what could be done, because I felt like I probably had a little bit of unfinished business with kayaking, because I decided to leave probably when I was starting to just creep onto the world stage. And yeah, and now here I am. I'm glad I did it.
How fulfilling is that, to be able to do that, to go back into the sport and not go out on your terms? I'm sure you're not done yet, but be able to reach that point once again.
Yeah, it's pretty special. And I think going back in with a slightly, or having experienced different things in the last few years, it definitely, I probably had a bit more of a passion than I did potentially in the past when it came to sprint. And so I went in just really, really wanting to be there and just enjoying every single day being on the water, being able to train. So I think it's just pretty special and unique, and it's a pretty amazing job to have, really.
Certainly not a bad one. I don't want to put you on the spot, T, but are we going to see you back in the surf ski world if we get to race, or are you still in the kayak one? Or are you going to dabble in both?
I'll do what I can. Like, unfortunately, as you guys announced yesterday, the doctor's been cancelled at the end of the year. And I'd already booked my tickets, so...
I was going to say, you told me you already booked.
Oh, God, you're braver than I. I'd never thought about that.
It was more wishful thinking. I was hoping it would go ahead, so I just thought I'd throw it down there. No, I definitely want to stay involved, and, like, I'm still doing coaching on the surf ski around my sprint training, and I still love it when there's a good downwind and the group I paddle with are frothing to get out there. Like, I definitely get amongst it. And I guess it's more of a question of, are we going to have the ability to travel in the near future to be able to access those surf ski events? But I'd definitely love to stay involved in the community, because it's just an amazing community to be around.
What about kayaking, T? Is 2024 in your sights?
Yeah. Well, I guess that was sort of... more on my radar than being in Tokyo. That sort of seemed like a bit of a pipe dream. So, and after finishing fourth and so close this time round, there's definitely that aspiration of wanting to chase that elusive top of the podium.
That's awesome.
So I think, you know, like, yeah, who knows what will happen, but for now I'm feeling pretty excited.
That's awesome, T. You probably won't miss any surf ski races between then too. Maybe by the time 2025, we might be back.
Yeah, maybe.
Hey, Timmy, I wanted to get your insights on a bit of a comparison between the two sports. Now, surf ski is a family, you know, especially for you and the rest of the Think team, yourself and Macca and Sean and Kenny. You guys have done a lot of traveling together and spend a lot of time together. How does a relationship and enjoyment like that compare to being in an actual team boat, a K4, with three really talented paddlers?
Yeah, I think it's different, but I think one thing that especially the New Zealand women's team have worked on is to really build that close-knit family sort of environment. And you notice that compared to some of the other teams, you know, like when we were training on the Gold Coast, we have family dinners a couple of times a week. You know, we go out and get our nails done together. We hang out in our spare time. So it's, although everyone comes from, you know, different areas and that sort of thing, it's something that we've tried to consciously work on over the last year. And it certainly made such a big difference when it comes to those high pressure environments like the Olympics, you know, we're just so much tighter, and it's really exciting to see your teammates succeed even when, you know, you might not be on the podium with them. You sort of feel like you're there. So it's different. We don't necessarily have a beer every time after we paddle like we probably would when we're away with surf ski, but you never know, I might be able to introduce that into the environment. But
the drinking culture never went wrong, hey?
Yeah.
Nuts. Before we transverse too far out of the Olympics, I do want to know what the differences, the main differences you found between 2012 and, well, 2021, but 2020. Were you a different athlete? Were you? Do you think you were fitter, faster? Obviously, there's going to be notable differences in the way that COVID affected it, but how did you feel?
I certainly felt, physically, I felt more prepared. Like in 2012, I was still just coming into the kayak scene, and I had a lot more to learn, and I certainly have learned a whole lot more and got a whole lot fitter and stronger since then. But I also think I was probably a bit more mentally prepared. Like I've done a lot more racing since then. I've had a job where you deal with stress every day. And so to come into these Olympics, it was actually quite nice and refreshing to feel ready and relaxed and prepared on that start line. And to think back on where I was in 2012, I was, 10 years younger, I was 22. I was still very fresh. But at the time, I guess you feel like you're super prepared. But it's cool to be able to contrast that.
Yeah, for sure.
For those listeners who don't know, Tennille is also a paramedic. She has proven that she can juggle plenty of things at once. Tennille, I just want to ask as well, earlier on the podcast, Macca and I were speaking about some reflections that Clint Robinson had between the difference between surf ski paddling and kayaking, and the way that surf ski paddling really benefits his and plenty of other people's flat water competition. Have you found that since coming back to kayaking, you've got something new, or you've got a kind of different base in you that you've developed in the surf ski?
I think probably the one thing that makes the biggest difference is when the conditions aren't perfect, I have that confidence in myself that I go out in anything on a surf ski. Like I might be in a smaller boat, but it's actually all good to be thrown around a little bit. And I think that is probably a huge benefit to those people who come from a surf ski background is, it's okay if there's a bit of wind. Like we actually get excited if it's a bit windy and choppy because we can probably handle it maybe a little bit better than some of those people who paddle on flat water all the time. but yeah, that's a big assumption. But yeah. Oh, sorry, there's actually someone knocking on my door.
Oh, that's exciting. A bit of movement in hotel quarantine.
It is exciting. We don't...
Okay, we might have breaking news here. Tennille, when was the last time you did a COVID test?
I don't know. Oh, I'm getting a van to let me get outside, so it is breaking news.
Not as exciting as the last time we got interrupted by Fergus Morgan's dad.
Oh, let it run its course, Macca. We're still going.
Very handy. Very right. Yeah, very handy. Just give out your room number. Okay.
Perfect. Thank you.
Cheers. Sorry, that's so good. You can go outside. That's even more exciting than us.
Yeah, breaking news, Tennille Hatton. You can breathe fresh air once again. That's huge.
Oh, I am so excited. This is my, third day inside, and I get to go out at 6 p.m. tonight.
Brilliant.
A walk outside.
Brilliant.
How good.
We won't keep you until 6 p.m. I just had one more Olympic question before we got into the business end of our interview in the 10 doubles. But Tennille, you had a front row seat to one of the greatest Olympic sprint performances of all time in what Lisa Carrington achieved. What's she like as a teammate and as a paddler to be around as well?
Yeah, as a teammate, I think it's, like, obviously most people would get pretty starstruck and I do a little bit too, but it's been quite cool that I've started paddling when Lisa was paddling. We raced together when I first started paddling, and to be able to see her evolve as an athlete is pretty amazing. But personally as a teammate, it's cool because you can just sit down and have a yarn and have a laugh, and it's just a good time, which it is, it's nice to see someone so successful and like a force to be reckoned with out on the water, but that can actually relax and have a laugh with outside of racing.
Well, it sounds like a really enjoyable experience, but today it's going to have nothing on this, our 10 doubles segment, which this episode is sponsored by Viacobi. All right, so Tennille, we're going to ask you the same 10 questions that we ask each of our guests, and we want you to answer as quickly as possible. I know you were pretty nervous about this and you wanted a bit of a heads up, so I'm going to throw a practice one in, just a quick practice question, all right? First thing that comes to your head, T. All right, Tennille Hatton, are you a surf ski paddler or a kayaker?
Oh, I have to go for kayaker.
Oh, that's so heavy.
Yeah, we might just end the phone call here.
This is a surf ski podcast. Are you kidding me?
Can we reframe? We'll go with Surf Lifesaver or Kayaker. That's easier for you.
Okay. No. Because I don't know. No. Nah.
It's still kayaking.
No.
All right.
No, ask it again.
All right. We're going to pretend that never happened. But Tennille, 10 questions. Are you ready?
Yes. Bring it on.
Question number one, what paddle length and angle do you use?
Am I surf ski? I use it.
Surf ski.
I use a Bracket 7 at 208 at a 60 degree angle.
Okay, and for our kayak enthusiasts, what do you got? We'll let you have it.
Yantex Gamma 213 at 60 degree angle.
Question number two, what is the fastest kilometer you've ever recorded?
Oh gosh, I don't know. I think in my surf ski, I think I've done like a 330, 315, but on flat water, 348. I have to be able to throw that in there.
Which of course is still the fastest ever 1000 meter time for anyone playing along at home. That's right, the world's fastest paddler, Tennille Hatton, is on our podcast. Tennille, question number three, what's the furthest you've ever paddled in one session?
Oh, I think like 38K?
37K too far, or 37 and a half too far. Question number four, I've got a double ender. What is your favourite pre-race song and pre-race meal?
Pre-race song. Golly, that is a tricky one. I'd have to go for, at the moment, it would have to be Zac Brown Band. Okay. Knee Deep, featuring Jimmy Buffett.
I love it.
It's a good one. And my favourite pre-race meal, bacon and eggs.
Yes, love it.
Just yum. A classic. Yeah.
Question number five, Tennille. What's your favourite surf ski race in the world?
Oh my goodness, there's many. But I think my number one for conditions and experience has to be the Gorge, just because there's just so many frothers there and you get to hang out with them all week. And I'm one of them. And you just get perfect downwind conditions every single day. And it's just such an amazing atmosphere. That has to be my number one.
And we won't mention the beer tent.
I was going to, as one of my highlights.
I can imagine. But... anyone that thinks that Tennille might have a drinking problem. Question number six. What's your ultimate racing war story?
Oh, it didn't really go wrong for me. But I was involved in rescuing a fellow peddler off...
Is this Billy Bane? Is this
yeah,
my
you
housemate?
Know this one, Matthew. Yeah, it's with him, but I didn't rescue him. I rescued Renee when his ski got obliterated, probably 2K out to sea. And I had to paddle him back to shore on my ski. So it was like a 2 or 3K paddle with a 90-kilo human sitting on the back of my ski in pretty wild conditions.
we're speaking still about one of the great kayakers, correct?
Yes, we are. I don't want to throw the last name in there, but you got it.
Question number seven, Tennille. Who is the greatest surf ski paddler of all time, male and female?
The one that comes to mind, I've got to say Sean Rice. I got into the international like surf ski scene probably a bit later than a lot of the people. And at the time, Sean was, you know, the number one guy to look up to. So I'd have to say Sean and the males, and females, Michelle Ire. Yeah, she was the absolute legend of females in paddling, and it was always a goal to try and catch up to her and try and beat her in a race.
I always get nervous asking this question because sometimes it comes back to bite me in the ass. Question number 8. Who is the worst trainer you've ever come across?
The worst trainer? Oh, man. I don't know.
The delayed pause can only mean one thing to me. She doesn't want to say it on his own podcast.
It's all right, T. I've got thick skin.
Nah, I can't. I won't dob anyone in.
Keeping the peace. We don't like that.
Question number 9. What do you rate as your greatest paddling achievement? And that's on or off the water. And you know what, T? We'll let you include kayaking as well. So your greatest paddling achievement.
Ooh. I think winning Worlds in 2015 in Tahiti has probably got to be my number one paddling achievement, because that was the first year I managed to knock off Michelle Ire at the top of the field. So it was a pretty special moment to be able to catch up to and pass my, I guess, hero in ski paddling. But it was also the most incredible conditions. It was the funnest race I've ever had. And yeah, I think it was just, all round number one.
Question number 10. Finish this sentence. I'm a paddler because...
I'm just a total downwind frother. And ski paddling just allows me to do that.
Well, T, for a downwind frother, you're a pretty good flat water kayaker as well. Congratulations on your Olympic campaign. And thank you for speaking with us on the Paddler's Pod.
Yeah, thank you, boys.
Yeah, T.
Macca, a fantastic conversation with Tennille Hutton, except for all of the parts where she identified herself as a kayaker. That is heartbreaking to hear.
Ouch, maybe we picked the wrong person for the podcast. Nonetheless, we had a great time chatting to Tennille, a good old friend of ours.
Super proud of Tennille and everything that she's achieved. She is a surf ski paddler, come good. I saw messages of support from all corners of the surf ski community, so everyone was super proud to see her in action. And Macca, I'm super proud of us too, mate. We've done it. Another episode in the can. But before we go, there is a little bit of housekeeping we want to get to. Give us a paddler's plug. Hashtag the paddler's plug. Let us have it. Show us you getting out there on the water in either the warmer conditions or the cooler conditions. We want to know what you are getting up to. Facebook or Instagram, hashtag the paddler's plug. And we will have someone to celebrate on the next episode. Macca, you've already made your big call, haven't you?
2032.
Surf ski paddling will be in the 2032
it's
Olympics.
Happening.
I think you're dreaming. I'll tell you what, though, if it is, maybe they'll run it on the Goldie. Who knows, mate?
Snap it at the Seaway. 30K, perfect downwind.
How old will you be in 2032?
What are we now? 2021. 32, 13, on 27. I'm going to be 40 soon.
Well, maybe they might run an over 40s division for you or something like that. I think... If surf ski paddling does get into the Olympics, we'll be old, crusty sea dogs by then. Macca certainly
Speak
passed
for yourself.
Our time.
I won't be with my Vicobi UV range, mate.
Mate, the yin and yang, Macca, of this podcast. I'm going to have something positive to say, given the negativity that you've shown throughout today. We did point earlier towards the fact that here in Australia, surf ski racing has not really resumed since the COVID pandemic began. But I'm going to say that each state of Australia will get one semi-major race to compete in this year. And, mate, if that comes true, we will certainly be happy about that.
Now, that's a big call.
Macca, racing-wise, you heading up to the old woman?
I certainly am, Sam. I wouldn't miss it for the world. Give me a race, I'm going to be there. There's no questions asked.
Well, Macca, racing is only a few weeks away for you. That's exciting, mate. You get stuck in and make sure you finish things off. Who knows? Maybe we'll be back before then, but you know what? We deserve to put our feet up, so it will probably be afterwards. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and look after yourselves wherever you are around the world.
Until next time, take care and enjoy.
Peddler's Pod with Sam and Mecca.